yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep...
Our guest this week was born in Denver, raised in a small farming town in Porterville, California, earned a bachelor's degree in nursing from California State University, and a master's degree in health services administration from Arizona State. After being a critical care nurse for 10 years, she held various leadership roles in health services administration for 36 years. From 2017 to 2022, she was the president and CEO of Premier Health. And from 2019 to 2022, she was the first female chair of the Board of Trustees of the University of Dayton. Her name, Mary Boussalis. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to a most amazing lady who's done so many firsts in her life, which we'll get into later. Her name, Mary Boussalis. Mary, welcome. An honor to have you.
Likewise with me. Thank you, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood? Your mom and your dad? Your mom, 101 years old? Please.
Well, as you mentioned in the intro, I grew up in California's San Joaquin Valley, which some people refer to as the salad bowl, but it's a high agricultural producing area. And so my childhood was unique in that I grew up on state hospital grounds in a small town. And I lived with for a long period of time and had kind of constant exposure to severely developmentally disabled children. So I think that was a huge influence in my life. My father was a surgeon, and my mother stayed home to raise my four brothers and myself. Both of my parents' my grandparents were Greek immigrants. So my cultural background was sort of double-teamed and very much emphasized in my childhood, even though I did not grow up around in a Greek community. My exposure in this small town was more around those of an agricultural background, a large Hispanic population, the disabled, as I mentioned, and I went to school with children from a reservation. I'm a public school product, and I think the most important thing I learned from my father was just have a sense of humanity throughout your life. He was an incredibly kind person, not a stereotypical surgeon by any means. He demonstrated a love of learning and emphasized that to me and my brothers, and was just a fabulous, kind gentleman. My mother is my hero. She's 101 years old for a reason. Probably her incredible resilience would be her hallmark, I think. She's faced a lot of things with that type of a lifespan. Tremendous courage, determination, what strong faith looks like on a daily basis. And I would say has taught me to keep moving forward no matter what the circumstances.
You mentioned that as a freshman in high school, you worked as a summer teaching assistant with children with developmental disabilities. What did they teach you, Mary?
I would say, you know, my husband and I talk about this a lot. He uses the expression, life is full of ordinary days. And I think if you can appreciate ordinary days, you're a step ahead. Sort of the simplicity and the simple joys in life, Jack. And I believe that my exposure to developmentally disabled children taught me that. For all their challenges, they demonstrated tremendous joy and being present in the moment. And that is a lifelong lesson I struggle with sometimes, but it had a huge impact on me.
You get a nursing degree from California State University, and soon thereafter, you become a critical care nurse, which you did for 10 years. Talk about that chapter in your life, please.
It was extremely rewarding, I think, because when you're in critical care, you're generally in situations that have a major impact on a person and their family's life. And so, you know, it was not something to take lightly, or certainly you were never bored. It was a high acuity, high intensity, hence the name situation. I think it integrated everything I had learned in a demanding and real-time way, and that you could impact a person in a long-standing way, whether it was a positive outcome or a sad outcome. And I found it very challenging and very rewarding.
The job our nurses do every day is amazing. I think there's a special wing in heaven for nurses. What do all great nurses have in common?
I think that they have the ability to translate their compassion and caring into action on behalf of their patients. And the action can often look like, take the form of advocacy. It can take the form of anticipating their needs based on the trajectory of what's happening, applying and monitoring technology, implementing the plan that is so critical to their health outcome. And then I believe they just know how to emotionally connect and work as part of a team. A great nurse, it's really not about her. It's about the patient.
We're talking to Mary Boussalis, and in 1986, she took another path. She got into healthcare administration business. And the world's never been same. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WGAR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula. We're with Mary Boussalis. And in 1986, she left nursing and went into healthcare administration. Mary, how and why?
Well, I wanted to build on the career within the industry I was in. I really loved healthcare as an industry. So I didn't want to start in a completely different direction. I wanted to build on things. And as much as I loved being a bedside nurse, Jack, I was becoming restless. I had experienced most situations after doing this for 10 years, and I just felt like at 30, or my early 30s, I was sort of bumping up on the majority of experiences. So I wanted to have a broader role and build, but go in a different direction. So I looked around, I looked at several options, and my thought was, because I had a clinical graduate degree, if I got a master's in a school of business with an emphasis in healthcare administration, it could possibly differentiate me from my peers, because I would have the clinical and the business. So that is why I went to a school of business at Arizona State instead of a school of public health. And it really worked out for me. When I was with physicians and nurses, I would tend to emphasize, depending on the situation, my clinical background. When I was with board and business and community leaders, it would probably be more of an emphasis on the business background. So that combination worked very, very well for myself.
How was it you got started at Premier Health?
Well, when I started, it was not Premier Health. It was a large, one of the 100 largest hospitals in the country, Miami Valley Hospital in Dayton, Ohio. And because I had been in several hospitals during my prior career, I had this sort of drive to look for something unique or special. And what I initially did is I would talk to outside executives who came into my capstone class and ask them where they would recommend for someone newly minted out of graduate school in administration, where would they consider going? And it was amazing to me what a small world healthcare at the large facility level was. And many of them mentioned Miami Valley Hospital and a man named Rush Jordan. Rush Jordan has the only endowed chair in healthcare at the University of Alabama. He is since deceased, but he was a fabulous mentor to me. And I will never forget when I interviewed with him. He looked at my resume, and unlike all the other interviews I had, he said, you know, you've done a lot in nursing. We should not pigeonhole you. So I would think we want to broaden you and give you different exposure. And I knew when he said that I had found the right mentor and right place. And the rest is history.
Speaking of the rest is history, tell us about Premier Health today.
Premier Health today is a large system. It's the largest system in Southwest Ohio, and it is has five inpatient facilities. It has a huge physician network of over 700 primary care and specialists. It has, like most systems, evolved to being very, very outpatient. It has something like 8 to 10 freestanding EDs, many urgent cares. And it is just an incredible place. What is unique is not just it's a not-for-profit organization. It's locally governed. So the Board of Trustees are people who live in the region. And it is Dayton is unique because there is no county hospital. So Premier does the majority of indigent or Medicaid care, and it also bears the largest teaching obligation as part of its mission. And contrary to what many people may think, you don't generally make money teaching. You do it because it's part of your value system and your belief that it makes you better as an organization. So it just is quite remarkable and was a fabulous career for me.
We're talking to Mary Boussalis, who's very remarkable in her own way. 36 years she spent in health services administration. From 2017 to 2022, she was the president and CEO of Premier Health. If you want to learn more, www.premierhealth.com. Mary, tell us about those 5 years as president and CEO of Premier Health.
Well, I could talk a lot longer than the show if we wanted to cover all that. But I would say what was a hallmark of those 5 years was the obvious occurrence of a global pandemic, something no one signs up for, was not anticipated, and it was incredibly challenging, very sad at times, and I learned so much and have such deep respect for the front line of people in healthcare because they are the true heroes of the pandemic. We were in situations where we didn't have enough supplies, we didn't have enough people. We had to essentially invent things based on the science that was changing all the time. At the time, it was like flying an airplane and fixing it as you go, all the while maintaining the safety to the best of your ability of both your staff and the patients. To me, Jack, it was very analogous to being in a war because of the mass casualties, the unknowns, and just not a controlled situation, as you've all read and heard. But I think a tremendous value was having very deep expertise. Miami Valley and any organization that is large tends to have very deep expertise and pockets of that. So we essentially pulled that together with the help of outside resources and ran it like you would a crisis. And most healthcare organizations are very familiar. They run drills just like the military does. And so they're very good in times of crisis. But it was challenging, to say the least, and something I will never forget.
The COVID hit mid-March of 3 years ago. Earlier you talked about the nurses being advocates. The nurses had to become family for these patients. Talk about that.
Well, I think what was, you're absolutely right. And what was very hard, and you all of us probably know people, because of the risks of the transmission of COVID, very sadly, patients were isolated for their family safety. And I think back to your point on the nurses, most often the nurses were the ones, and there was a large toll of death, and they were the ones holding that person's hand so sadly when they died alone or using an iPad to communicate with the family. Unprecedented. And there was a lot of burnout. It's a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder. I think something like 30% of caregivers experienced that. So one of the things we did was a program called Helping Hands, where we actually asked administrators and others to go in and take tasks off of the nurses so they could be freed up, either to have some reprieve. We had respite areas. We asked the communities. The communities were incredible. They sent in food at a time they were struggling just to offer something up. We had volunteers making masks. We partnered with Dayton is headquarters for Wright-Patt Air Force Base. So we partnered with many industrial firms to make masks and supplies that fulfilled the requirements of safety. Premier, in particular, partnered with the University of Dayton, and we opened up one of the first drive-through testing areas in the country. There were so many firsts, and it just goes to show the incredible things you can do when you have to do them. It's not something we would have chosen. I felt for the nurses. I wish I personally could have done more, but they're the ones who bore the brunt. And we all know it, and we should never forget them.
We're talking to Mary Boussalis. People that know her say that she's a great combination of steel and velvet. We're going to ask her about that. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula. We're with Mary Boussalis. Mary, people that know you say, great combination of steel and velvet. How do you do that?
You know, I think as a leader, there's certain times you have to make sort of hard edge or more the steel analogous decisions, and then there's times to be more of a soft edge or the velvet you refer to. And I just think you need to use the power of your position to determine what situation you're in. For me personally, the longer I worked and developed relationships and build a strong team around me, I think you can be more flexible and more of the valve that allow the team to disagree with you, to disagree with one another, so long as when you make a decision, you're all united, and that you as the leader don't always need to be right. Now, having said that, there are other times when you have to make tough decisions. And after you have the facts and the input, and sometimes, unfortunately, your team, is split, then you have to have the strength of will to make the best decision for more of a hard edge, because I think that's your obligation. So hopefully you do this all with your board support and things work out. But I think it's important to be open to both sides of that coin.
Mary Kay Ash was the founder of Mary Kay Cosmetics with the pink Cadillacs. And she once said, Mary, P&L means not only profit and loss, but more importantly, people and love. Your thoughts?
Well, we have had a similar thing, and I think it's not unique to the system I was with. We'd say no money, no mission. And so the P&L is always very, very important. But particularly in healthcare, you know, we're a labor-intensive organization. And that continues today, even with people working at home. You know, nurses and doctors don't work at home. They have to be in the trenches. So because we're so labor-driven, I think having a strong, committed workforce is even more important. And the fact that you're affecting people's lives on a daily basis, you know, that's a lot of, that's very critical. So I agree with the Mary Kay Ash, and I would say it's even more imperative in healthcare.
We're talking to Mary Boussalis, and in 2017, she was honored as a member of the inaugural class of the Dayton Business Hall of Fame. Tall cotton. All right, you speak about your team. Great team. More than half of your executive team at Premier Health were women. And you were the first female CEO president of Premier Health. What advantages are there to having a woman as a president CEO?
Well, first and foremost, Jack, I would say that healthcare is 70 to 80% female employees even today. So if you have a female leader right out of the gate, I would say you have the advantage of people relating to you at some level. That's for starters. Now, what you do with that is important. The data I've looked at shows that women tend to grow companies faster. They generate more revenue dollars, and they're very good from a multidimensional perspective. I think we historically have been socialized to be more collaborative. And as I've been on the boards of education and raised my own children, so much in the world is moving to a team concept. The idea of command and control for all aspects of business is no longer the primary focus. I think teams, diversity of thought, shows better outcomes. And I think women often, not in every case, but often more inherently bring those capabilities to the table.
You were in leadership within healthcare administration for 36 years. What were the biggest changes, Mary?
Oh, so many. We've already talked about the impact of the pandemic to some degree. I would say, in broadly speaking, the change in the payment model and the movement, it's still in flux, to being paid based on outcomes versus using resources. What are your outcomes? very important. The defining what quality looks like and the metrics for evaluating that. Tremendous growth. Technology, both technology in the clinical arena, the evolution of the electronic medical record, having real-time data, everything faster, smaller, the advent of thinking of patients as customers, and with that, the whole movement outside of hospital laws, really from inpatient to outpatient, explosion of outpatient sites and of care, and now the next explosion of having things in your home and being able to do so much via computer, whether it's technology, smart technology on your body. That's what makes healthcare so exciting. The sadder things are those like the opioid epidemic. Still, the cost of healthcare is way too expensive, and unfortunately, it's a very fragmented and difficult to navigate industry, I would say.
We're talking to Mary Bosalis, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to an amazing lady, Mary Bosalis, who's had so many firsts. She's the first female president and CEO of Miami Valley Hospital in Dayton. First woman to serve as CEO of Premier Health, which is a $2 billion organization. And the first woman to chair the University of Dayton Board of Trustees in the school's 170-plus year history. So let's go to University of Dayton, and from 2019 to 2022, you were the first female chair of its board. Tell us about the University of Dayton.
The University of Dayton is a private Catholic research university. It is one of three Marist universities in the country. It's small. It's about 8,500 undergraduates, and it has an exceptional graduation rate, exceptional development of students with the mindset of learn, lead, and serve. And, of course, one of the most important things, they have an exceptional basketball
team. Oh, brother.
And fan base with the University of Dayton Flyers.
All right. What is the biggest thing that the students taught you while you were on the board? Other than basketball, Mary,
Okay. My take on the students is they, regardless of their background, students come at things with an irrepressible enthusiasm that something can be done. And it gives me great faith to see the generations coming up. When you hear so many people lament about what's wrong with the world and how you can't, no one wants to do this or that. I would encourage them to have exposure to students, and I would beg to differ because of the way students are solution-oriented and can do, and their enthusiasm for life. We're going to be fine.
If you want to learn more, www.udayton.edu. UDaytonEDU. Mary, throughout your career, you've been time after time thrown into a wide variety of challenging assignments that seemingly you weren't ready to tackle. How have you gotten up to speed so quickly, time after time, and always been successful?
Well, that's very kind of you. I'm not sure I've always been successful. I think I've tried to learn when I failed. But, I think the key to anything is both being involved and being organized and being prepared. So, you know, I mentioned earlier, a large organization has tremendous resources. When you're in the job that I was, you can't possibly know everything, but you can certainly find the people. So I would constantly surround myself and seek out people with expertise and listen to them. And often a visual is much better. So I think you can also learn firsthand what's going on by going to the source, whether it's to the staff, making rounds. Tremendous learning in seeing what's out there. If something is overwhelming, my father told me this once, just break it down into, what's the saying, take the elephant one bite at a time. And I think just approaching it that way with the logic, a fact base, and the experts, finding the best of the best of anything outside or inside your organization is invaluable. At least for me, it was.
You've been many things, but first and foremost, you've been a wife and a mom to twin sons, Ben and Nick. A couple of months, we're going to celebrate Mother's Day that President Woodrow Wilson started in 1914. Mary, what's a mom?
A mom is, to me, this has been said a lot, someone who loves you unconditionally for you. No matter what you do, a mother's love is there and always will be. It's a unique relationship. It's a special. Someone once said to me, our job is to give our children roots and wings. I think the wings are a little hard on mine sometimes, but I basically agree with that. So a mother, I also think of the Bible verse, 1 Corinthians, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. And to me, that epitomizes a mother's love.
How did you balance being a mom, a wife, and having this fantastic career?
Well, some days were pretty hard, Jack. I'm not sure, it's ever perfectly balanced or that's attainable. I think now people talk of trying to integrate, but it's, to me, it was constant reprioritizing. And it first and foremost, for me, started with a strong partner who we were committed to one another first and foremost, and then our children. So as a net result, we both had careers. For all my children's childhood years, we worked and we basically did our family. I wasn't probably out a lot socially. That wasn't related to work. I was at my children's events. For me, I had lived my life a little backwards from tradition in that I had my children very late. And I would say better late than never. But the net result was I had sort of gone up the career ladder, and I did have, not that I didn't work a lot of hours and all hours of the day and night, but I had more control of my schedule. And my husband had his own practice as a physician, so he had even more flex time, and we just managed together. I would also subscribe to the theory that you offload what is not of high importance. So a lot of tasks I offloaded or I hired out so I could be present with my children.
You mentioned a few minutes ago, mom's job is to get roots and then wings. A lot of moms today, Mary, can't let the kid go, can't let the kid become what God wants them to become. How does a woman learn to let the child go?
I think, you know, I think there's different periods in time, Jack. I read a lot about children, and especially since I had boys, and I think there were times when I was more important in their early childhood. And then as they became men, they tend to identify, I think, normally with their father. So my experience has been they kind of come and go at different levels emotionally. And I think the next iteration may be when they do have a family and have children of their own, they may seek you out or, you know, you may become close in advice around that. So it depends on the age of life. But I think it's a gradual, and for me, you know, that's just, if you really believe in the strength of the individual and that your role is to give them wings, you have to let go. It would be selfish, quite frankly, not to.
Mary, your 101-year-old mom is your hero, but you're a hero to so many others. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you for having me. I hope it was helpful.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. Make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoke.
Believe in yourself.